when you're arguing, you know, for the first mover, actually the unmoved mover, where you're arguing from the fact that what's in motion is inability, right? And it can't give itself the act it doesn't have, and so on. So you're going back into that, which is how closely knit those things are. Mm-hmm. And it's not, and he has these two arguments right next to each other, of course, number two and number three, right? Is that clear enough? Then? See, have a lot of fun with scattered reason. You know, you got to stop and kind of, what, you know, chew on what he says and so on. And I know myself, you know, from years of reading Thomas and Aristotle, when I first read some text, you know, I understand some things I don't, right? And I make an attempt to understand them at the time, you know, but sometimes I say, you know, I'll be back here someday, you know, understand it better the next time, right? You know? And it kind of makes me come back and say, I didn't realize all the things are in there. The way my teacher, Kasurik, you know, would give you something and tell me, go read that, Dwayne. You know, I'd come back and ask some more questions, and he'd say, Dwayne, you don't read very carefully. And go ahead and show me what's right in the thing, you know. So you can imagine, you know, after that kind of a line from him, you know, that I started to read more and more carefully, right? But you know, he kind of used to say when he gave the lectures at Laval, you know, just teach us how to read Thomas, huh? And reading carefully, you know. Most authors aren't worth reading that carefully, because they're not a very careful writer, huh? But somebody like, you know, Aristotle or Thomas or Shakespeare, for that matter, right? They're worth reading carefully. And since you have to read them carefully to really profit from them. I think sometimes people, you know, they they get indigestion because they try to do too much at a time. And really, you know, when you kind of lecture and you have maybe his finger there, you know, and then he'd stop and he'd talk about it. And sometimes he'd go in talking about some modern philosopher who's got all kinds of trouble because he doesn't see this little point here, you know. And that's kind of the way you have to do it, right? See? And come back to one little thing, and then you read out something else to kind of cast light upon that. Huh? Okay. Now, the first objection was saying that God's effect should imitate him, be like him, right? But they're all composed. Okay. So he says, to the first, therefore, it should be said that those things which are from God imitate God, huh? As the things caused imitate the first cause, huh? But it's of the very, what, notion of being caused, huh? Mm-hmm. That it be in some way composed. Mm-hmm. Because at least it's what? Being is other than what it is. Because mm-hmm. it's receiving its what? Existence from God, right? Mm-hmm. So he's going to make that more clear later on. So it's the very idea of being caused that your existence is not what you are. And therefore you must have a composition, right? So he's kind of not just saying, you know, that, well, the creature is like God, but not perfectly like God, right? Now, that's true, but he's saying that the creature is caused by God, right? And it belongs to the caused as such to have composition. Yeah. At least the composition of what? Yeah. What it is and its existence, huh? Okay? Because we see its existence from God, right? If what it is and its existence are the same thing, then it would be uncaused, huh? Okay. But see, that would be more manifest when you take up, you know, the effects of God. Question 50, I guess, down there. Now, to the second, it should be said that with us, composed things are better than what? Simple things. Because the perfection of the goodness of the creature is not found in one simple thing, but in many. But the perfection of the divine substance, or the divine goodness, is found in one simple thing, as will be what? Shown below, right? Huh? Okay. Now maybe Thomas could be a little more unfolding himself there, right? Huh? Okay. Because there's a difference in creatures between the immaterial substances, what we call sometimes the angels, right? What the philosopher calls the separated substances, meaning separated from matter, and the material substances, right? In the material world, it seems that the composed is more perfect than the what? Simple. But in the immaterial world, it's just the reverse. The more perfect the angel, the more simple it is. Huh? And one way that they see this is that as you go up towards God, an angel has fewer thoughts. But those thoughts, what? Express more and more clearly than what the larger number of thoughts of the lower angel express. Huh? And of course, up here you get God who says and understands everything perfectly with just one thought. Huh? You've read my little poem, huh? You know, God the Father said it all with one word. No wonder when that word became a man, he spoke in words so few and said so much, he was the brevity and soul of wit. Remember that? Okay. But I take the that theorem, right, you know, from the second book of Euclid, right? You see the comparison, right? A little proportion, where I say that words are to what you say a little bit like the perimeter is to the what? Area, right? Huh? Okay. So what's contained, you might say, the meaning is contained in the words I say, right? Huh? It's something like the area that's contained by the perimeter, right? Well, you know my that great love I have of the fifth theorem of the second book of Euclid, right? Where he's showing with rectangles, right? That for all rectangles with the same perimeter, the square will have more area for the same perimeter. Remember that? It's a beautiful theorem because he shows that the difference in the area between the square and any oblong, right, rectangle, will be the square of the difference in the length of the sides. Okay? So, you really just to exemplify that examples here. 5 by 5, 4 by 6, 3 by 7, 2 by 8. All of these rectangles have what? A perimeter of 20. Okay? But the area goes down from 25 to 24 to 21 to 16. As you can see in these examples, the difference in area is the square of the difference in the sides. 5 and 6 is 1, 24 is 1. Right? 5 and 7 or 5 and 3 is 1, 2. 2 squared is 4, it's 21. Right? 5 and 8 or 5 and 2, the difference is 3. 3 is 9 squared. Finds a difference, right? And then you realize it's possible to have one with more perimeter, say 24, and an area only of what? 20, right? So you can contain more what? Area with less perimeter. Okay? That's kind of interesting, huh? It's also interesting that you could say in a way the square is the simplest of what? Figures, right? So in a kind of distant way, you see that the simpler contains more, right? Huh? Like a little anticipation.